Registry Matters is an independent production. The opinions and ideas here are that of the host and do not reflect the opinions of any other organization. If you have problems with these thoughts, FYP.
7 o'clock on the dot. Recording live from FYP Studios East and West, transmitting across the episode. Oh, Jesus. Transmitting across the internet, not the episode. We're not transmitting across this episode, Larry. But this is episode 323 of Registry Matters. How are you tonight?
Doing awesome. And remember, no weather tonight.
I was going to just say, there will be no weather talk tonight. So, go over and press like, subscribe, leave a comment, 5-star rating, get notifications, hit the bell. Let me get my little bell thing. Where's my little bell thing? I'm on the wrong screen, wrong thing. There, there it is. There. Go press like and subscribe. And you, perfect. It even did all the little noises this time. So tell me what we're doing tonight, my friend.
Well, it's just me, Mr. Doom and Gloom. And I know how heartbroken everyone is. But we are planning to take a look into Florida's new PFR registration law. And we're going to take a dive into the state of New Mexico's legislative elections and the legislation that we'll have to deal with in the upcoming session. And we did have an article from your favorite state of Alabama that we have decided to cut because of time constraints and maybe not being quite on point for a holiday, pre-holiday episode. So we
Really awful, Larry. I was like, can we be semi-light and fluffy? I mean, we're going to upset everyone else in the South there with the thing about Florida, because that's not good. And it was just not a very friendly article. Not nice.
But you're missing the point. These people are convinced that if they just elect more of that kind, that they're going to have the promised land. So I wanted them to see what the promised land is really like. That's why I put it in there.
If you can't do the time, don't do the crime.
That's right.
You know, okay, without talking about the article, Larry, there was one point in there that said that the one that they executed, whatever it was in the last handful of days, that he had been severely abused his entire life. So the entire system failed him. And then are we surprised at the age of 19 he does something atrocious?
I was going to make that point in the segment, okay, that how young he was and how unforgiving they are. But, you know, they claim that they're very forgiving in the Bible Belt.
Clearly. All right, let's move on to this shellacking, I guess. Florida implements stricter laws for PFRs. And you've got this piece planned regarding some recent changes. And I'm sure they're all for the much more better for the lives of the people in Florida that have the registration kind of obligations. And it was enacted by House Bill 1235. The law became effective on October 1st, and I've read all 82 pages. I got ChatGPT to give me a summary. I had it read back to me in multiple different languages, and I'm ready to pick this apart. Are you?
Not really.
And if you're not ready, why am I inviting you back?
I think because nobody else is crazy enough to show up week after week.
That's probably true. All right, well, since you're not ready, I will read from the House of Representatives staff final bill analysis. And it says, the bill makes several changes to 775.21 and 943.0435 FS. We're assuming that's Florida statute, but your mileage may vary. And that's relating to the registration requirements for PFRs and bad PFRs and penalties for non-compliance. And if you need me to really be explicit about the bad people and then the less bad people, I think you need to check yourself. So do you think any of the changes in this 82-page bill are going to be good for PFRs? And I knew it was coming. All right, and I'll consider that a no, and we'll keep going. That is followed by a long list of changes. Can we go through some of them?
Sure, we can go through them.
All right, well, the first one on the list is amending 775.21, I guess it's paragraph 2, Florida statute, to clarify the definitions of quote-unquote conviction, quote-unquote permanent residence, quote-unquote temporary residence, and quote-unquote transient residence. Is this a good change for PFRs?
Well, I will just read what the new law says and when we can decide that. The law, as amended now reads, permanent residence means a place where the person abides, lodges, or resides for 3 or more consecutive days. And then they inserted the new language. For the purpose of calculating a permanent residence under this paragraph, the first day that the person abides, lodges, or resides at a place is excluded, and each subsequent day is counted. A day includes any part of a calendar day. I don't really see how that changes positive, but perhaps it is, depending on how they were enforcing it previously, but it doesn't sound very positive.
In reading this little bit of it, I was feeling a question that I would have right out of the gate would be, when I check into my hotel room at 3 p.m., does that count as a day? If it just said 3 days, now they've at least clarified that that day doesn't count.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It may be positive depending on how they were previously calculating it and what, if any, judicial interpretations had been. But it is very clear that Florida doesn't want you to be there very long without registering. They've made it clear that visiting is covered.
And I want to bring up one other thing. You have stated repeatedly that it's 3 days and everyone else thinks it's 48 hours. Does this put that issue to rest?
I hope so, but those people keep referring to another section of Florida law that I don't have in for tonight's episode. And I've always advised to read legislative enactments in harmony and try to harmonize them. So if there's another section that says something different, we would need to take a look at that so the Floridians can let us know. But it seems to be very clear to me that it's 3 days, and it looks like they're excluding the first day. It looks that way. It says at resides at a place that each subsequent day is counted, but the first day the person is excluded. That seems very clear to me. So if you get that 4 o'clock in the afternoon, like on a conference, if we were going to have a conference in Florida, that day would not count. So then they would have the full day of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Sunday, the partial day would count, but Sunday could be their departure date. So we could theoretically, under this reading, have a conference in Florida.
And we need to have it in very North Florida, and then we need to put everybody on a bus and drive immediately into Georgia so they don't violate.
Now, that's a great idea.
All right. Well, the next change is amending 775.21 and a bunch of other stuff after it. And then also 943.0435 with some other letters. I think you can find it. To authorize a bad PFR or a normal PFR to use the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, FDLE, online reporting system to report any changes to vehicles owned. Now, this might be an improvement because it sounds like they're going to enter into like something of the digital age.
I think it very well could be, and I've advocated for this type of reporting of changes. I'm hoping it is. Time will tell. But so far, I'm not convinced until I see how it's implemented. But it might very well be an improvement.
All right, and then next, it amends 775.21. God, okay, so I got to give you the letters. 6G2B, and then 9435.0435. Subparagraph 4, whatever, 4B2. I can't read all these. I don't know what these things mean, Larry.
Well, just say the statutes.
Yeah, all right, well, I said them. 775.21, and then 943.0435. Then it goes on to require a sheriff to electronically submit to FDLE the addresses and locations where a bad PFR and a normal PFR maintain a transient residence within 2 business days after a bad PFR or a normal PFR provides such information to the sheriff's office. Now, is this good or bad? Clear and short and concise.
I would say bad.
Okay. It changed 775.21 previous language and 943.0435 its previous language to require a bad PFR and a normal PFR who intends to establish a permanent or temporary or transient residence to another state or jurisdiction other than Florida report such an intention at least rather than within 48 hours before the date he or she intends to leave the state and to report to the sheriff's office as soon as possible before departure any travel that is known by the PFRs 48 hours before he or she intends to establish a residence in another state or jurisdiction, or 21 days before the departure date for travel outside of the United States. Wow. What about this?
Well, I would say that it's probably unconstitutional, in my opinion, because it seems to be a prior restraint on travel. There's a little bit of wiggle room there, but not much. It seems like to me that if you have to travel, and it has to be at least 48 hours, that would do away with any emergency travel whatsoever.
Right.
Business travel, sometimes it's not known more than 48 hours in advance, but surely people in hospitals and who've had accidents and stuff, you wouldn't get 48 hours worth of leeway. So this is definitely a prior restraint upon one's travel. And clearly, the PFR registry cannot impose disabilities or restraints.
So I've heard that it's just a civil regulatory scheme and it's not punishment.
Well, as we fight these things, we have to actually bring in proof of the restraint that's happening, and not only hypothetical, but real life examples of how it restrained a person. And I think we could probably axe this provision or enforce them to modify that. But this one is definitely not good, in my opinion, probably unconstitutional, and needs to be challenged.
I'm in a bit of a giddy mood, Larry. And have you ever heard of a movie called Uncle Buck?
Never have.
Okay. Well, the beginning of the movie is there's a husband and wife, and they have two kids. I'm pretty sure it's two, but it might be... No, it's three kids. It's three kids. And there's a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever it is. And like the wife's father has passed away. And the husband and wife have to get out of town, and they're trying to call everybody on their list to see if anybody can babysit. And they're out the door. They have about a 7 o'clock flight out of Chicago or wherever the heck they're living. And they got to finally call. Oh, what about your brother? Yes, Uncle Buck comes and stays. The whole thing I'm bringing up here is that if you got that call that one of your brother or sister died, or one of my family members died, and I've got to get on the plane and go somewhere first thing in the morning, how do you do that if you have to do it prior to that 48-hour window?
Well, you don't do it because you wouldn't be able to do it. But here's the problem. The PFR community is not present in Tallahassee when this stuff is being debated, I'm quite confident. And they're not explaining this dichotomy of this is not a feasible thing and it's a prior restraint. Somebody needs to be saying, on behalf of the Florida Action Committee, my name is... And I'd like to say the following to the committee. Before you give this a due pass, this comes very close, if not being a prior restraint on travel. And according to Smith versus Doe, and you give them the citation number, which I don't have in my, but the U.S. report number and the page number, the registration is constitutional only because it doesn't impose any disabilities or restraints. This is definitely a disability and restraint. But when the PFRs are not there, the law enforcement is probably not going to make that argument on behalf of PFRs. Would you agree with that?
I think I would, yes. They're going to do it and like, let's try to sweep this dust under the rug so that nobody sees what we did.
And when you're not there and you don't have a lobbyist, these type of questions, no lawmaker is ever going to think of this. They've never heard of the registry unless they have a relative on it. All they know is it's something good and it keeps Floridians safe. That's all they know. And that's all they want to know.
Moving along then, it amended 775.21 in parentheses 10 in parentheses A to specify that the different PFRs who fail to respond to any address verification correspondence from a county or local law enforcement agency within a specified time period commits a third degree felony, and that each instance of a PFR's failure to register or report changes to the required registration information constitutes a separate offense. Now that can't be good either.
Well, it's definitely not good, but at the risk of offending people, what would you expect from a state that believes in individual liberties and keeping government out of people's personal lives? What would you expect from them?
Expect them to stay out of people's lives.
So, but you know, just think about this. You not only have to report in at the specified intervals, but now you're under threat of enforcement if you don't respond to their flyers and to any type of communication that they make with you, the way I'm reading this, address verification correspondence. I think correspondence would definitely include a flyer, a letter. It might even include an email or a phone call. I don't know, with that correspondence, if it's not defined somewhere in the statute, that's very broad. But now you're on threat of prosecution if you don't contact the people who are communicating with you. In addition to the prescribed intervals, they can create new intervals, which basically makes the registry for you to have to report as frequently as they demand that you report in. Please admit that that's funny.
They could have, like, the brand new sheriff there, like, okay, I want you to go drive around to these 500 people's houses in the county and go drop these leaflets off every day for the next month. And they have to phone in every time? They have to pick up the bat phone and call in?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Can you admit that this is funny?
That's not funny. But that sounds very Florida-y, as the way that I understand Florida.
Wow. So, yes, okay.
All right, well then, down to 943.0435, to require, if a normal PFR is in the custody of a local jail, the custodian of the local jail to register the PFR within three... Now the jail has to register you?
Oh, yeah, this is funny.
Okay, now, so the jail has to register the PFR within 3 business days after his or her intake and upon his or her release and forward such registration to FDLE to take a digitized photograph of the PFR while he or she is in custody and forward such photograph to FDLE and to notify FDLE of the PFR. Oh, sorry, if the PFR escapes from custody or dies. Now, what about this one? Gosh, like, escapes from custody or dies.
Well, I can certainly see that it would be a rational basis for an escape or even possibly a death because we'd like to update our books that the person's dead. But I'm not sure about the photographing and registering and transmittal within 3 days. Now, remember, this is happening in a state that does not believe in unfunded mandates of local governments. That's what they claim. They will preach about unfunded mandates, but amazing when it's a mandate that they are happy with, there's no problem with unfunded mandates. So now the local jail administrators have to create knowledge of how to do this, have the machinery, which I don't know how much tech you would need. They already have cameras in most jails, but whatever you would need to do this. And is the Florida Department of Law Enforcement paying the local jails to provide these services, or are they simply mandating it because they can? Okay, Floridians, listen to what I'm saying. You're electing these people who claim that they don't believe in wasting money. Here's your examples over and over again. Keep going.
I'm just imagining you go down to Key West, and they probably have a fairly robust police department down there just because it's kind of a party city, but just you end up drunk and disorderly, and you end up in the local jail, and they're supposed to take a picture of you, butt print, all that stuff, and send it to FDLE? It just sounds insane.
Well, the whole thing of having jails register people is really mind-boggling to me because that's not a part of what they normally do. But if you really believe that there should not be unfunded mandates, Florida legislature, why are you requiring an unfunded mandate? Now, if there's a Floridian that knows that the FDLE is paying the local jails to do this, please let us know and we'll clean this up next week. But in all my research through the years, I've only unearthed one state that pays local law enforcement for functions they impose on them related to the registry, and that's the pure wind-driven state. Can you name that pure wind-driven state?
Maryland.
Yes, they pay for the processing of PFRs there. It's written in the statute, but as far as I've never unearthed that in another state, it's generally an unfunded mandate.
All right. The new law amended 943.0435 (9), (a), relating to PFR's non-compliance with registration and reporting requirements to mirror the language in 775.21(10) for a bad PFR and providing that each instance of a PFR's failure to register or report changes to the required registration information constitutes a separate offense. Now, this also does not sound positive.
Definitely not. This means that if a PFR fails to update his or her vehicle information, as well as the PFR failing to update the internet identifiers, he or she has committed two separate offenses, the way I'm reading this. This means that they can stack the time consecutively. This means longer sentences and more cost to the state. Again, this is from the conservatives who claim that they're so fiscally frugal. It also inspires prosecutors to stack charges because they can campaign on putting people away for hundreds of years. Yeah, so this is not good.
For these dangerous people that they got a new license plate, and because their registration, all that expired, and they get a new license plate and they don't update that information that already exists in the DMV records or whatever they call it there. That's an offense. At the same time, they got a new email address. So now they have two offenses. We didn't see how long. Maybe that's coming up. So, like, oh my God. All right. Well, what's the penalty for noncompliance in Florida?
Well, according to the committee analysis, failing to comply with registration requirements is a third-degree felony punishable up to 5 years in prison and a $5,000 fine. This means they could receive a significant amount of time plus any habitual enhancements that may be available and applicable under Florida law. I haven't done that research, but I think Florida does have a habitual offender statute, unless PFR, failure to register, is specifically exempted from their Habitual Enhancement Act. This would mean like a three strikes law. This would be, gotcha. In addition to getting the 5 years on each of the two charges, they file a separate habitual offender proceeding, and that could put the person away for whatever their habitual law provides. So you could be looking at decades in prison. And remember, these are the people who watch the budget very carefully.
Now, just for clarification, it says by up to 5 years. Does that mean the judge could go none?
Well, it didn't say a mandatory minimum. And so I didn't do that research, but I'm shocked if Florida doesn't have a mandatory minimum for failing to register. That would be mind-boggling if they don't, but I'm not going to say they do when I don't know that, but it would be very shocking if there isn't some required incarceration that goes with a failure to register.
I think the moral of this story, Larry, without even going any further, is that don't go to Florida. Under no circumstances should you go to Florida. Is that fair?
Well, I don't know why people go there, but they go there because the taxes are low. They don't have an income tax, and they shift all their cost to government to tourism. And
yes,
then
sales tax.
And then they have the belief, a strong belief in God and individual liberties. See, that's what attracts people to Florida. And plus the weather. I mean, you have a lot of sunshine, a lot of mild temperatures. So there's a number of things, but I've never found anything that's that attractive. I would not want to live there, but it's a large population in Florida.
Yes, it is. All right. Well, then it amended 943.0435, parentheses 11. For those of you at home listening and not watching, I keep putting my hands up in these little curved positions to tell you the parentheses. So that was to require that FDLE receive notice of a petition for removal from the PFR registration requirements 3 weeks prior to a hearing and to authorize FDLE to present evidence in opposition to such a petition. That's so nice of them that they would bring evidence to oppose a petition. This doesn't sound positive at all.
This is definitely not positive. Now we have the victim at the table along with law enforcement. With both victim and law enforcement at the hearing, I'd say that even fewer will be released from the registry. And from what I've heard from Florida, it's very few already, but it's going to be even fewer.
You spoke to one of our patrons, longtime patron, super patron, and he had done a petition for removal from the PFR registry, but he was denied. Do you want to discuss the removal process for Florida briefly?
Sure, but let me state at the onset that I have not practiced in Florida, and I have only basic knowledge of how the process works.
According to the committee analysis, there are two ways off the Florida registry. The analysis says a PFR or bad PFR must maintain registration with FDLE for the duration of his or her life, unless he or she receives a full pardon or has a conviction set aside in a post-conviction proceeding. And a court may consider removing a PFR's registration requirement if the PFR... if their requirements to register was not based on an adult conviction for specified offenses and the PFR. Now, this is one, has been lawfully released from confinement, supervision, or sanction, whichever is later, for at least 25 years. And number two, has not been arrested for committing any felony or misdemeanor offense since his or her release. God, so no felony jaywalking, Larry. So how does this process work?
As best I understand, the PFR files the petition, and it's served on the proper respondents, which would be the state's attorney and now the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. And the analysis says that the state attorney in the circuit in which the petition for relief is filed must be given notice of such petition at least 3 weeks prior to a hearing on the matter and may present evidence in opposition to the requested relief.
What went wrong with the individual you spoke with on his case?
As he related to me, it was actually 20 years at that time. But the problem that he had is he had been convicted of a failure to comply. It was very technical in nature, but he had not updated something, and that rendered him ineligible because he had had a conviction in the 20-year period. So he was not eligible for the relief he was seeking.
Would you please say that again?
Under the statute, there was an exclusion period, I believe he said 20 years. And if he had any criminality over the 20 years, he would have been ineligible. And he filed it within that 20 years despite being ineligible. So he was denied because virtue of the statutory language, the relief he sought, he was not eligible for that relief.
Well, then, if he wasn't eligible, why would he go forth and spend the money and the time to go forth and try to get off the registry? I mean, I can see why he would do it, but why would you do it if you're ineligible?
Well, that would be a great question for either super patron or his attorney. I have no idea. I generally do not recommend filing a petition for something that a court cannot grant relief as a matter of law, meaning that if the court doesn't have jurisdiction to grant the relief, you don't want to tie up the court's time. Unless the other party is on board and has agreed that they will not appeal. Those are the exceptions to my Larry rule of don't file things you're not eligible for.
Are you a first-time listener of Registry Matters? Well, then make us a part of your daily routine and subscribe today. Just search for Registry Matters through your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button and you're off to the races. You can now enjoy hours of sarcasm and snark from Andy and Larry on a weekly basis. Oh, and there's some excellent information thrown in there too. Subscribing also encourages others of you people to get on the bandwagon and become regular Registry Matters listeners. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to Registry Matters right now. Help us keep fighting and continue to say F-Y.
And you mean that it is the prosecution, whatever, the DA's office, whatever, they're going to go and say, we oppose this? If they go in there saying, we don't have a problem with this?
Yes, under that scenario, if I can be certain there's not going to be an appeal, then I would go forward. They do that all the time. If parties can come to an agreement, judges will hold their nose sometimes and sign orders where they really don't have the jurisdiction to do that. But if no party disagrees, very few people question the order. So if the FDLE, now since they're on part of the process, if the FDLE has no opposition to it, and the state's attorney for the county has no opposition to it, and I can ascertain that, I'll tell the person, we're going to file this petition, knowing that you're not eligible as a matter of law. But I've gotten an agreement from the parties that they're going to take either no position or they're going to emphatically say that they don't oppose it. Now, that's going to be a tough sell to get those two parties to agree to stand down. But other than that, I'm going to tell them we can't do this because this judge is going to be flipped on appeal and the judge is not going to sign it. And the state's attorney in this case made it clear that she opposed the petition and that he was ineligible for the relief he was seeking as a matter of law. He went forward anyway, so it'd be great to figure out why.
It's very sad.
Indeed, it's very sad for our patron because if anybody deserves that, I mean, his conviction goes back to the 1990s. I think that's a very old conviction.
And I hope I'm not speaking too far out of turn and keeping him out of the firing squad, but I don't know when, do you know when Florida's registration kicked in? Because I think his conviction was prior to registration.
I think it was. I think it might have kicked in 95 to 97 when they were pushing after the Jacob Welding Act passed Congress in 94. The state started signing up to come into substantial compliance. And so most of the states launched your registries in the mid to late 90s.
And I believe his conviction is prior to that. And so then he's completely unaware that he is required to notify of a change of address because registration happened after he was convicted and he didn't know he had a change of address. I believe that's what his situation is.
It was definitely related to an address change, but I'm not sure that he, I think he was already registered at the time. But these things are very difficult because it's certainly ex post facto was applied to him, but I believe he would be a good candidate for a challenge, particularly in that 48-hour thing, because right. That's a prior restraint on travel. But I hate to tell a man to spend $50,000 to $100,000 of his money to do that when he yep. can just simply go up the seaboard of a little bit and he can get off the registry. But if he's got money to burn, I'm getting nearing the end of my professional career, and I'd love to do a case like this in one of these southern states, and I'd love to be a part of it, but I hate to waste people's money.
Understand. Well, let's head over to the New Mexico Legislative Outlook. You want to discuss this and give us an update on what's coming down the pike here in 2025 in New Mexico.
Yes, I do indeed want to discuss this, and I think you're going to enjoy it.
I'm sure I am. I read the Narsal Digest newsletter, and I've got some questions, if you don't mind. You stated, in our most recent report, no new laws were enacted in the 2024 regular session. Do you believe that will be the case in 25?
Well, we are approaching the 2025 regular session, and I do have some trepidation. This is a 60-day session, which opens up the agenda to any bill that is proposed, regardless of how absurd the bill is. And we're concerned that the bad bills that were opposed in 2024 that the governor had to place on the agenda will certainly return in 2025 because they don't need the governor's blessing, and she already put it on the short session agenda. So, yes, we do have some trepidation.
And quickly clarify that this is a 60-day session. What is the other version of your sessions?
It's a 30-day session, and it's budgetary only. They are convening for a budget or whatever the governor puts on the agenda, and she puts some bad crime bills on the agenda, and they were able to be dealt with effectively in the short session. But we can't play the same strategy in a longer session because it's more difficult to run out the time clock.
I see. And what were some of the bad bills that you opposed in 2024?
Well, the most absurd of the bills was one that would require chemical castration for certain PFR type offenses. In addition, there was a bill that would have permitted the death penalty to be imposed for some PFR offenses. We bottled those up in committee, so they never made it out to the floor to be voted on.
Now, Larry, I'm going to take the tiniest little bit of detour. If you bottled those up in committee, were they never even voted on in committee? And I have a follow-up question if you answer yes.
No, they were not voted on in committee. The only vote on the committee was to table them.
If you want to follow some current events, can you relate that to something that happened in this last week that is basically identical?
Nothing's coming to mind. What are you thinking?
The Attorney General nomination.
Oh, well, that was not quite the same thing, but sort of, because he withdrew his name when he realized the votes weren't going to be there. When he was making his rounds, the vice president elect was accompanying him around. Senator Vance was accompanying him around. And apparently he received bad news from a few senators that would have placed the vote beyond his reach. So he did not ever get to the voting stage. But there is some similarity in that, yes.
My only similarity is that you don't have Lisa Murkowski voting yay or nay. You don't have Tom Cotton voting yay or nay. You don't have any of that going on. He just pulled it so it never goes to a vote. That's the similarity that I'm trying to make between the two situations.
Yes, in that regard, it's similar. But when you do a tabling motion, there's no debate on a tabling motion. It's just a straight up and down vote. And we managed to table those bills. I think we'll still be able to get rid of the bills this year, but it's not a slam dunk by any means.
the death penalty for PFR offenses and the chemical castration?
Yes, Florida for sure, and I know proposals have been considered in several states recently, and I think it passed in Louisiana and Alabama as well. And so yes, these things do gain traction, particularly in the conservative leaning jurisdictions around the country.
Do you think that you can hold the line in New Mexico? Can you be the single standing lone wolf that holds it?
Well, there's certainly no guarantee that the Liberty and Justice Coalition can prevent New Mexico from acting irresponsible legislative proposals. And this is particularly true considering the large number of state representatives and senators who decided to retire from the legislature last year. We have a significant number of new legislators taking office in January.
Now, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I was doing my own research on this, and there will be 28 new representatives and senators serving in New Mexico come in 2025. The 42-member Senate is getting 15 new legislators with 9 Republicans and 6 Democrats. And the House, the 70-member House, is going to get 13 new legislators, which is 7 Republicans and 6 new Democrats. That's a very large number of people to swap out off the bench, especially in the Senate.
It's an unusual large number, but not in the script, but I'll tell you the backstory. What's happening is we had some very senior members that had a lot of years in, and they don't get a salary here for their work, but they get a very generous pension. And I mean very, very generous. And it was essentially doubled a few years ago from the annual payout for each year of service. So there are people who had in decades of service that just could not say no. So you're trading, say you've got 25 years of service and you're going to get a $75,000 a year pension and you're getting no salary. That's kind of a no-brainer. Would you rather have $75,000 or would you rather have a $200 a day per diem for the 60 days or $12,000? Which would you choose if you had that choice?
75 sounds better. So 75 divided by 12, you know, you end up with what, $6,000 bucks a month?
Oh, yes. So it's just shy, I think, if I understand the formula, of about $3,000 for each year of service. And so like my senator has in 12 years, so it's roughly a little over $30,000 a year for that number of years. But some of these people had a large number of years and they just couldn't sit on the sidelines any longer. So that's, it's wow. An unusually large number, but that's the reason why.
And I do notice that there are more people from the red side of the aisle. Do you think that you will be able to work with those people?
Oh, well, I've been able to in the past because we're not as polarized here as they are at the federal level. And I generally have pretty collegial relations with most people on the Republican side of the aisle. But we really don't get a choice. We have to work with a team that the citizens handed to us. So the answer is, yes, I'll do my best to work with them.
The governor has indicated repeatedly that she wants New Mexico to modernize the SORNA, the Sex Offender Registration and Notification Act, to comply with the Federal Adam Walsh Act, the AWA. Now, are you okay with New Mexico joining the ranks of AWA-compliant states?
Yes, I am, if it's done correctly. We have had several concerns about the previous proposals, and we've worked diligently to make these bills acceptable. Unfortunately, there wasn't sufficient time in the most recent session to make all the changes to make the legislation acceptable. But I'm going to say that we're closer than we've ever been in terms of being able to come to an agreement. The Department of Public Safety is working, I think, in good faith, finally, with us. So I think we might be able to do it. Yes.
And since you kind of worded that in such a way, can you implement the AWA constitutionally?
We believe that substantial AWA compliance can be achieved without violating the ex post facto clause if the legislation is carefully crafted. And yes, we can do it.
And what are your top objections to the recent proposals that have been made?
Well, like I said, I do commend the state for including much of our language in my last proposal. They've moved over a lot of the language that we have. Unfortunately, they're still seeking to do things that we cannot agree to. I am willing to do juvenile registration with strict protections for the juvenile offender. They cannot be listed on the internet. They cannot be required to register with adults. And they must automatically be terminated from all their registration obligations when their juvenile court jurisdiction expires, which is when they've reached and achieved their 21st birthday. That is inconsistent with the Adam Walsh Act, but it has been approved by the SMART Office for the state of Maryland. I think we can mimic that. And that is one of the big sticking points, among others. But I think we can do that.
And is that your only stumbling block?
No, there are some other issues. We are very sensitive to the argument that the current system that we have that requires out-of-state convictions to be evaluated for equivalency is cumbersome and expensive. we get that. Their solution is to have a catch-all provision that requires PFR registration if the person is required to register in the state of conviction. I've been dead set against that because we have a clause in our Constitution that's called the Equal Protection Clause. And so if Georgia wants to register people for obscene phone calls and we don't, I think that we, our people who move here, deserve protection that every other New Mexican would have. But I can consider going along with that if those who are already have gone through this existing process are grandfathered, meaning that we won't touch any of the equivalency determinations, that anybody who's already here who's been determined not to have an out-of-state equivalent. So we would close the door going forward. So I know the Department of Public Safety is listening. You've got my blessing to close the door going forward. You have my staunch opposition if you try to disturb previous determinations that you've made for people that are already here. We're going to fight you tooth and nail to the legislature, and we're going to fight you in court if we fail in the legislature.
Now, what about tier alignment stuff?
That's also proven to be a sticking point, and I want those who would see their obligations increased to be frozen in their current track, meaning that if you're already here and you're in a 10 or 20-year track, the lifetime track, lifetime's lifetime, but if you're in a 10 or 20-year track, I want you frozen because we're not going to be, that's not going to attract any new people to come here because they're already here and they're in that 10 or 20-year registration period. And they've already been complying with these obligations with the expectation of being free from the obligation at some point. And I'm willing to go along with the increase if it's applied prospectively for only new conduct going forward. Meaning if you commit a new crime, then you're screwed. But then those who would have a reduction, magically, I'm not opposed to changing them. I do a flip-flop here. I want those people to be reduced to no more than what's required by the AWA. And they've called me out on that. They said, well, gee, Larry, it's kind of strange. You want us to reduce the people, but you don't want to increase the people. And I said, well, yeah, the reason why is because there's no ex post facto issue there. You can reduce a person's obligations, but you cannot increase them. So therefore, I don't think I'm flip-flopping at all.
Well, it sounds hypocritical to me.
Not really. The argument I make is it's a certainty if we apply these increased obligations to our existing registrants. But I have my doubts that anyone who sees their term of registration reduced will file a lawsuit. Don't you?
I think I can go along with that. Well, who will be representing the organization in Santa Fe?
Well, it could be me, yours truly, if I'm physically up to it. If not, we're going to have to try to hire someone and pass the jug around for donations to try to hire a lobbyist. And the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, they're passing the hat around right now because of their funding challenges, and they need $20,000 to hire a lobbyist. And we've never paid that kind of money, so I'm thinking I might want to go work and be their lobbyist rather than ours, because I've gotten only a fraction of that number for the many years I've done this.
So you'll do what people in the government do. They retire and then come back as a contractor and they double dip?
Oh, well, that's true. But we probably will raise enough money plus what we have on hand to have a lobbyist present this session. But our PFR organization is really diminished because we don't have a lot of bad things happening here compared to most states. So people believe by divine intervention or somehow or another that everything is good in New Mexico, and the donors have really slacked off. And we also haven't really pushed hard for donations in the last couple of years. But it takes money to do this, folks. If you can't do it yourself and you're not qualified, you need to donate to the organizations that have people who are qualified and are doing it on your behalf. Otherwise, we're going to be having these discussions like what we just had in the first part of this episode about stuff that passed in Florida. We're going to be having these discussions on a regular basis if we don't do more when these bills are being considered.
This is kind of like the TSA. We put that in after a very, very, very bad event. I don't want to say that it wasn't a bad event, but there hasn't been one since. So you almost need to have something kind of go along and something bad happen to justify their existence?
Unfortunately, I think we would probably have more supporters and donations if there had been bad things happening here, but we've kept them from happening.
Very well. I have an announcement regarding merchandise. Is there anything else that you want to cover before we head out?
No, I'm glad to be done. And we got it done in record time, 45 minutes.
That is pretty close. So I've been working with one of our patrons, and he was my roommate at the conference. And he's been helping me put together a series of t-shirts. We've always had like since almost like day one, there's been just like a registry matters. And who wants to run around with a registry shirt on? That's not going to bring up good conversations with people. So I've created, obviously there's FYP Studios. And then I think you'll love this one, Larry. There's one that says it's not punishment. It's a civil regulatory scheme. Do you approve of that one?
I do like that one.
And there's another one with your picture on it and says, not funny, Larry.
Oh, that's funny.
And then probably my favorite one is I had AI generate a kabuki machine. And then it says, kabuki machine. And you have an announcement. You have an offer to people for that one.
Every person who is subject to polygraph examinations, if you will wear this shirt, I will purchase it for you.
You have to say, if you have a polygraph coming up, you will pay for their shirt if they have to like selfie photo them going into the office with their shirt. Do you think that would impact the results of your quote unquote test?
Well, I actually think the polygrapher would think it's funny.
Why do you think that they would think it's funny?
Well, because I've known some polygraphers, and they do have a sense of humor about the whole thing. You remember the one that I talked to when I reversed my opinion, when he told me it was nothing
yes.
more than a flip of a coin?
That's what he said.
I said, but you're the president of the Polygraphers Association. He said, what does that have to do with anything? He said, it's still not reliable.
I hate that thing with such a passion. I hate it so very much. So please, if you would, if you are interested, head over to fypeducation.org/shop, and you'll see the different shirts. We're going to be adding a whole bunch of more products and different designs coming up for your enjoyment. And I think that we will have many of these things at the conference to give away as door prizes and things like that. That maybe also there'll be a table set up if you are so inclined to also purchase them.
That sounds fantastic.
We are not going to record next weekend, is that correct?
That is correct, unless something earth-shattering happens that we must report on.
I would imagine that there's not a lot of things happening the week leading up to Thanksgiving.
So we'll get a vacation.
All right, and so head over to registrymatters.co to find the show notes. Leave a voicemail at 747-227-4477. You can email us at registrymatterscast@gmail.com. Support us on patreon.com/registrymatters. For as little as $1 a month, you can show the support for the program. And that's all I got. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and we will see you in a couple weeks.
Good night, and happy Thanksgiving.
Good night, sir. Talk to you soon, Larry.
You've been listening to FYP.